Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben. And today we're here with, don't get mad at me, Noel. Today we're here with our super producer, Noel Pappy Brown, as
Happy.
Always.
Happy?
Yeah.
I was going to say Noel Malletman Brown.
Oh, that's good. They're both good. Something tells me that Noel would probably, you probably prefer the Mallet Man to Pappy, huh? He's shaking his fist at me.
Yeah, Pappy. That's a funny one.
So today we're looking at something that you told me about that I had no idea existed until the magic of Facebook informed us.
Yeah, a few people out there know about this, obviously. That's how I found out about it. I mean, there's photographs of this, and there's a couple of posts here and there, but not a lot of information about this. So it's going to be this could be very short, could be something longer if we take it, you know, different directions. But
yeah,
we are talking about the short-lived sport of auto polo. And
yes,
it's exactly what it sounds
it's
like.
It's exactly what it sounds like. People playing polo in cars instead of on horses.
Yeah. Now, okay, I thought about this a couple of different ways, and there's some crazy photographs you can look up online and see what's going on with auto polo.
Right.
And this is happening, you know, turn of the 20th century, so a long, long time ago, birth of the automobile. And I was wondering, you know, how there was that odd point in time where when the car came around, when the first, the gasoline-powered cars, the cars with engines, not steam-powered or electric or whatever.
Right.
When they called them the horseless carriage, and then people were doing some kind of kooky things. They were adding, a horse head to the front of their
carriage. I knew you were going to say that. That's the first one. Yeah,
something like that. You know, they're trying to make the car look like the horse, and people were saying, this isn't really going to stick around. You know, this is a fad. It's a trend. It's a flash in the pan.
Right.
Cars are going to be gone, but, give me a good horse. That's what we need is a horse.
If God intended us to roll, he would have given us tires instead of feet.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that was said all the time. And I was wondering if this is kind of a way, because polo was being played at this time.
Right.
On horses. A standard game, I guess, of polo, a typical game. And I was wondering if this was like a way of saying like, well, these cars, these horseless carriages can do the same thing as horses can out on the field.
That's a really interesting point too, because the public in many areas of the world was pretty skeptical about a car, just given the massive expense of a car and the propensity for a car to break down in ways that a horse would not.
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess in a way, if you want to look at like the modern World Rally Championship or something, I mean, that's almost like a steeplechase would be, jumping things, but not quite exactly the same. But I don't know. There's some some similarities to be drawn there, I think, between this auto polo sport and the birth of what they called the horseless carriage, at the turn of the century.
And this is the Wild West, by the way, the early days of cars, right? Figuratively speaking. So you guys know what polo is. Polo is team sport. You're on horseback. There are two teams playing. You score by hitting a ball into the opposing team's goal from horseback using a long-handed mallet, right? And it's usually on a large grass field, 300 meters long by 160 meters. The polo that we're talking about now still kind of like echoed those rules. They had people with mallets. They had mallet men, right?
Yeah.
And they had drivers and they had a ball. But this one was actually a marketing scheme, as far as we can tell.
Yeah, exactly right. It was kind of developed or reportedly promoted, I guess, first, and not necessarily the inventor. And I'll tell you why he's not really the inventor of this whole thing, but the first promoter of this sport, not necessarily the inventor, but the first promoter of this was a guy by the name of Ralph Pappy Hankinson.
Yeah. See, Noel, I'm not just picking on you. That's his name. It was an appropriate nickname.
Out of Wichita, Kansas. And in Wichita, I guess this guy was a Ford automobile dealer at the time. And he was from Topeka, but held this event in Wichita. But he's from Topeka, and he had devised this sport as a way to sell Model T cars.
Yeah, and break a heck of a lot of them, too.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's trying to get people interested in this. And he was able to get together a group of 5,000 people to watch this first event that happened in 1912.
Yeah, on July 20th, they had four cars and eight players, so two teams of two cars, the Red Devils and the Grey Ghosts. And the reason they had two people in there, I believe, is because one was driving and the other one was out there swinging with the mallet.
Yeah, this is nuts. Now, we'll get to that in just a moment, but I want to mention that 10 years prior, someone had proposed this idea. So in 1902, a guy by the name of Joshua Crane Jr.
Yeah,
he was of a polo club in Boston.
So kind of fancy.
Yeah, he
fancy
had said,
guy.
You know, well, he's a polo guy, but he said, you know what, let's do this, let's try this with cars. But they didn't actually do it. This guy, Pappy Hankinson, mm-hmm. was the very first one to actually do it and to actually get an audience, you know, of 5,000 people together to watch this happen. And what a crazy sport! Now we'll try to describe it, as you said, Ben. It's pretty insane.
Right.
It's a stripped-down car. It looks like a rolling chassis, really. It has, you know, you can picture a Model T without the body on it.
Yeah, that's a good way to say
it. So there's the radiator, the engine, the driver's seat, the chassis, the wheels, and that's about it.
That's it.
There's an extra platform on the side that they have built.
Kind of like a running board, almost.
Yeah, on the passenger side. Mm-hmm. And that is where the mallet man would stand and kind of hang on to, you know, bits of frame that were left behind or, you know, something that they had devised, like a hoop or a roll,
right.
A roll bar of some kind. The earliest of this, they didn't have any extra safety measures in place. But later, you know, as the sport kind of developed, and it did develop, I mean, it stuck around for, a good 10 or 12 or 15 years, mm-hmm. Surprisingly. I'm surprised all the competitors weren't dead at this point. But
the popularity picked up, after 1912. There were multiple leagues across the country.
And they started to develop, you know, some, I guess, safety features on these, if you can call it that, really.
And
I mean,
a regulatory body as well.
Yeah, and when I say safety, I mean, when you look at what they developed, the roll bars that they put in place looked like nothing more than a cheap piece of metal that they had welded or tack welded on, a hoop almost. Like, it looks so flimsy, Ben, like nothing really... It wouldn't really protect the driver or the mallet man if it were to roll over. Now, the driver was belted in. The mallet man was not. He was free on the side. And oftentimes, I would think that these guys would tumble off of their mount and into the path of an oncoming vehicle. Because there are four cars on the field at any given time, all of them, you know, with the goal of getting to the same ball. It's a regulation basketball that they would
play with. Yeah. So the ball is a little bit bigger. The cars could reach a top speed of 40 miles per hour.
Yeah. Now, that's the top speed of a Model T. So I don't know. That around 40, 45 is maxing out on a Model T.
Well, yeah. We know the first auto polo cars, like the 1912 cars, mm-hmm. were mobile runabouts.
Yeah, a little different. Those were steam-powered, right?
Right. Yes, sir.
And steam-powered cars.
Yeah, the first marketable steam car, the first one that was actually reliable enough to sell.
Yeah, and then after that, then they went to these stripped-down Model Ts
because
of their availability and the low cost.
Right.
Because I think those first vehicles, I think the price quoted was that they were a single-person vehicle. They only seated one, but that doesn't matter because the other guy's just hanging on the side anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
About $650, which was equivalent to about close to $18,000 in today's money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So not cheap by any means, because you're going out there to just absolutely destroy this car. And later in the podcast, I'll give you some information on what one team spent in 1 year on vehicles and equipment and maybe not in dollars and cents, but the cost of the equipment that they encountered for that 1 year of competition.
Agreed. And I'm going to pepper in some quotations from journals and papers at the time, because as it turns out, the British thought this was insane.
Yeah.
And people were marketing it as a reasonable thing in the States. They would say, well, you know, for polo, you need a large field and good weather, but you can drive inside.
And they were hopeful that it wasn't going to spread to their continent. However, it did. And and here's how this thing started to gain traction. Now, we talked about, you know, this debut happening in July of 1912.
Yeah.
Well, there was a time where this became wildly popular. Mm-hmm. And around that time, just after 1912, auto polo leagues started to spring up all over the United States. And they actually had a group called the Auto Polo Association that formed.
Yeah.
And they had large-scale exhibition events, you know, that happened all over again, mostly in the eastern United States at this time.
Right, yeah. It's like a Boston, New York kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But they did spread a little bit closer into, you know, like out into the Midwest as well.
To Chicago.
Yeah, because in the 1920s, in New York City and Chicago, they were kind of the principal cities for auto polo within the United States at that time. And they said that there were auto polo matches happening every single night of the week in those cities, in New York and Chicago. Now, can you imagine that? I mean, they were happening in Madison Square Gardens. They were happening at Coney Island. I can kind of picture Coney Island. I can kind of picture Atlantic City, places like that, you know, where the crowds are, you know, thirsty for something unusual, something different. You know, it's nightlife, it's entertainment, stuff like that. But to have this actually happening in Madison Square Gardens, I mean, that was typically reserved for more of the more, I'll say mundane, but, you know, concerts and, you know, live performances and things like that. But not necessarily auto polo happening at the turn of the century.
Okay, here's one from Western Field, the Sportsman's Magazine of the West. Auto polo is the newest craze of the day. As its full name, automobile polo, implies it is polo played with automobiles instead of with hay motors, which was a name for horses.
Ben, I like your 1920s voiceover. That's
thanks,
great.
That transatlantic.
Yeah.
wait, I just want to preview. Let me just read this one part just to sort of foreshadow.
Sure.
What happens with auto polo. Though several collisions occurred in the game at Dedham, no one was hurt. One man, stopping his machine suddenly, lost his balance and fell over the front board just as another carriage was coming right down upon him. This, however, was brought to a stop in time, and the player's own machine passed over him without doing him any harm.
Okay, so here's what we're talking about. Is a guy getting run over by a car.
That guy got ran over.
Now,
luckily it wasn't.
Yeah. But you know what? That happened often, and they said that, you know, broken bones and scrapes and scratches and everything were common, cuts and bruises.
Yeah.
But deaths were not common. And I wonder why. I mean, I wonder, because when you look at this and you're thinking that these guys are traveling at 40 miles an hour with 3-pound mallets that they're swinging at a, you know, full-size soccer ball and crashing cars together and banging them up. All the photos that you see, and well, not all of them, but most of the photos that you'll see will have, you know, people flying through the air. And here's the thing about
busting their humps.
I found out that a lot of the photographs that you'll see, the promotional photographs, weren't taken during an actual event. They were promotional stuff that was shot that was faking some of these collisions. So you'll see that in the, and this is funny, on closer inspection, I noted this, after, you know, some people had mentioned this, you know, in some of the forums. They said, look closely, you know, at the back end of that vehicle, you'll see a board that's propping the back end of the vehicle up. And then, you know, the photographer would say, you know, I'm going to take the photo in, you know, 3, 2, 1, and then everybody would bail out of the car in the most dramatic way possible. And it would look like an auto collision was happening, you know, like it was action on the course at the time. But so beyond all that, beyond the fake promotional photos, I mean, this really was a rough and tumble sport. It was something that, you know, you could expect to see car collisions. You could expect to see men getting run over by their own cars as they tumbled out and, you know, getting hit with mallets and, you know, cuts and scrapes and broken bones and all that. It really did happen that way.
Mm-hmm. And this was exciting to people. It was also a bit glamorous because consider the cost of a vehicle, right? The kind of people who would already be familiar with polo are already from a certain threshold socioeconomically. So this is a game that you see the well-to-do and maybe celebrities playing.
Well, sure. And then probably, you know, hired mallet men or, you know, hired drivers to drive on the teams, you know, like maybe the team is owned by somebody who's wealthy, but, you know, the people that are out there actually risking life and limb, maybe they're the ones who are, you know, just getting paid for the night or something, you know.
So let's talk a little bit about the rules of the game.
Huh? Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So the field is much smaller, potentially. It's at least 300 feet, 120 feet. They have 15-foot goals at either side of the field. The game was played in two halves, which were called chuckers. C-H-U-K-K-A-R-S. Yeah, I don't know either.
Chuckers.
Chuckers.
Okay.
As you know, the teams had two cars, four people in play, and one of them's driving, one of them's doing the mallet. And Scott, we already talked about how they positioned those people and how they, went from steam powered to, Model Ts. There were some early advantages, or people thought there were early advantages to this over, what they called pony polo for a while. And the main advantage being that your steed does not get tired, just runs out of gas.
Ah, I see. But, you know, there were a lot more things that could go wrong.
Yeah,
that's
what I
keep
thinking.
Because 40 miles an hour, you smash into another vehicle that's going 40 miles an hour. That's a pretty significant collision. I know that most of this was probably closer, you know, tighter. tighter scenario, you know, where cars are bumping into each other as they travel the same direction or something
right,
like that.
Yeah.
Know, likely not the head-on collisions that I'm envisioning, but I'm sure that there were some pretty significant accidents going on as well. Now, you mentioned the size of the field. You said it was at least 300 feet by 120 feet.
Yes.
With 15-foot-wide goals at each end. And the good part about this was that it could be played in a covered arena during the wintertime.
Right.
So it kind of fit perfectly into the region that this was being played in, the northeast region of the United States,
sure.
typically, and the Midwest. Now, we'd also said that the idea was kind of spreading at this point, or they wanted it to spread.
Yeah.
And the British had kind of hoped that it wouldn't spread to them, but it eventually did. And, you know, it went to many places across Europe, not all over Europe, but many places. Another thing that happened was that in Manila, in the Philippines, I believe that there was a Texaco-sponsored mm-hmm. team that was recruited. They recruited players from the U.K. to play in Manila on this Texaco team, and that was in the 1910s. So, you know, shortly after the inception of the whole sport is when they were doing that.
And it makes sense that Texaco would sponsor that.
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, I could see an old oil company doing something like that. I get
yeah.
it. And then in 1913, U.S. teams actually toured Europe to kind of promote the sport and, you know, tried to get it to get some traction, I guess, over in Europe. And
yeah.
I think they actually did because there were teams or leagues that formed, you know, across the way. So they said, you know, this is a good idea. We like what we see here.
Yeah.
Of course, the journalists were saying, oh, come on, you don't want to do this. This is a lowbrow sport. You don't really want to play a lowbrow sport, do you? And they said, well, looks like fun. I want to do it. I want to try it.
And the insurance companies say, guys, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And you know what? In Toronto, they went to Canada as well. They said, well, you know, we love it. The Canadians probably would love this. So they went to Toronto in 1913.
Yeah.
And auto polo was the first motorsport to be showcased at the Canadian National Exhibition during the 1913 event. And the sport really never caught on.
It just
in Canada.
Didn't catch on.
And I was looking up some info about the Canadian National Exhibition. It's kind of, if you don't know what it is, it's kind of like an annual fair that's held in Toronto. And it has been since 1879, so it's a long time running. And the original fair was held to showcase things like agriculture and technology, but in the most recent years, that's been changed or expanded to include things like innovation and science and, you know, just achievements of the Canadian people. Today, it's an 18-day-long fair, mm-hmm. and they get something like 1.5 million people that attend this event, so it's a huge, huge event. And again, in 1913, they're trying out this auto polo for the first time to show the Canadians, and they weren't too impressed.
So I would like to, on behalf of the United States of America, apologize to 1.5 million Canadians who have been robbed of the brutal joy of auto polo. I mean,
brutal joy. It would be fun to watch.
Well, you know, it's different because while these things have massive injuries, oh, and we do have a pretty good stat on that, don't we? On just the injuries to the vehicles as well as to the people.
Well, I got a vehicle stat, not people.
Okay.
So you know, I mentioned early on that you know the especially the cars that ran at Coney Island. I think that they started to develop their own kind of roll cages over the years, and I call them roll cages very loosely because. It's really not a whole lot. And it looks like they're even lower. And this doesn't make any sense to me at all. Some of these roll bars are lower than the driver's shoulders. So that means that if it were to roll over, that wouldn't really do anything. The crush zone is not, you know, covered there. But anyways, that's beyond the point. And the ones that they do have look very, very flimsy again.
Right.
However, you know, that didn't stop them from incurring a bunch of damages. Now, here's just a tally of damages that was encountered by one team, one group. Actually, I should say a couple of teams because this was British and American teams mm-hmm. combined, but owned by one person.
And that's so, in 24, right?
Yeah, this is Hankinson. This is Hankinson, the guy that originally started this whole thing.
Pappy.
Yeah, Pappy Hankinson. This is his British and American teams from just the 1924 season. Now, this resulted in 1,564 broken wheels, 538 busted tires. I mean, just mm-hmm. explosions, blowouts. 66 broken axles, 10 cracked engines, and 6 cars that were completely destroyed during the course of just 1 year. Just 1 year. Now, that's for this Hankinson guy. Now, he did this to promote, you know, selling Model Ts
right.
initially. You'd have to sell an awful lot of Model Ts to cover that kind of damage. But I'm sure he was making a lot of money on the promotion of this new sport because he's like the founding father of this whole thing, really.
Right.
I mean, the one who first to implement it, you know.
I hope he did well.
Me too. I hope he cleaned up on this because, I mean, I really do because, you know, he would have to sell a lot of Model Ts to cover this cost, we know.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do. I'd love to see this in action today.
I want to read another quote here from an article called Britain's Fear Auto Polo. In England, automobile touring is still an adventure, and anything more exciting than a race at Brooklands is insanity. Witness what The Auto, a British publication, has to say after reading our New York paper's account of a game of auto polo. It sounds very impressive, and we are quite willing to take all the excitement for granted. All we hope is that this lunatic game shall not spread to these islands. To do our own people justice, we do not believe it will, for they have scarcely arrived at the stage of nervous exhaustion when it requires the stimulus of motor polo to give a sensation of any kind.
Ben, where do I begin with this? Two voices in one quote.
I'm sorry.
I like it. But man, what you're saying there, that's funny. It's like it's too much stimulation.
Yeah,
it's too much. You just can't take in this much excitement at one event.
It's a lunatic game.
Yeah. Isn't that something? That's funny that, that's the way it was perceived. It's not just like, can you believe this is amazing. This is fun stuff to watch. It's more like, I don't know. I don't think the public's ready for this yet.
Well, and it also, it seems the way I read that quote is, there is a bit of a dig there as if to say, you know, look at what these guys are doing just to feel something.
Well, sure. It's the lowbrow argument
right?
I mean, that's what it comes back to every time now.
You're right.
I don't know where we want to wrap up with all this because I think we got a little bit more information, some new turn of
events
that's going on here, right?
Yeah.
Some modern versions.
I think that's where we wrap up.
Okay. Can I mention just one other quick thing?
Do.
When I posted this on Facebook, this is a while back, a couple weeks ago, people wrote in, and this is kind of funny, and I kind of felt the same way about this. You know, I saw it, you know, the photographs and thought, yeah, it looks pretty dangerous. It looks like a fun thing to maybe watch or even to be involved in maybe once, you know, just to try
it.
A lot of people wrote and said, that's no big deal. We do this all the time on four-wheelers. Or we did this with motorcycles. Or, my chiropractor even said, we used to play the same thing on motorcycles. That's kind of my chiropractor. No wonder he's in that.
Well,
he's probably got an endless supply of patients right there. So, you know, people have tried this, and I feel strongly as if I had tried that. I've tried this before on bicycles.
Yeah, I've done this on bicycles.
With croquet mallets, like the wooden croquet mallets. I know that I have a different ball, maybe a tennis ball.
They'd be too short for a car, but they'll work on a bike.
Exactly
or
right.
Or maybe a motorcycle too, depending on the bike.
Well, plus I was 10 years old and I had a bike. I didn't have a motorcycle at the time
right.
or whatever. So, you know, you use what you've got and people say that, you know, big deal, I've tried this before with that. And I get it, but this sport, this is like full contact ramming cars into other cars and running over the other opponents type plane.
Right.
It's a little bit more brutal than what I think it's getting credit for. It really was. And the quote that said something like deaths were rare, but you know, that leads you to believe that, you know, it happened. It didn't happen often, but it happened. And, you know, cuts and bruises were par for the course, broken bones, but also the accounts of people being run over. That's pretty horrific. And, you know, the cars were lighter. The wheels were thinner, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. How can you spin this, I guess? It's still hundreds of pounds, if not, you know, 1,000 pounds rolling over you.
Well, yeah, I have three things here.
Okay.
I guess four, but they're quick. So you can see the stunts where it looks like someone's getting rolled over by even a semi truck.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that happens all depends on the distribution of weight, right? Like if you have something off to the side, putting enough pressure on the left side of the truck, then the right side is going to be so close to off the ground that it could actually roll over someone without injuring them.
Sure. Got that.
But I think I think the case here, at least in the time with those Model Ts, I think the case was more that, the vehicles themselves didn't have as much power as we would just assume a car having today.
Sure.
Like it would be suicidal to hop into some cars and go and play auto polo.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're talking cars that weigh 3,500 pounds.
Right.
And
in excess of 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you wouldn't get to that speed on a small course like that. But You know, there's that aspect too, is that, you know, they're just that much more metal to them, and they're just heavier, and of course we're also completely ignoring the surface, you know, that they were laying on a grass surface that was soft.
Oh yeah, and, that's true.
And that helps as well. So you're not playing on concrete or asphalt, surface that, you know, is unforgiving. We could look at this a million different ways, really, but not to take anything away from anybody who has tried this in the past on four-wheelers or whatever, but this was the real deal right here.
Yeah, that's true. I'd love to try it on a four-wheeler, though.
I would, too. That sounds like a blast.
Let's see if we can get the bosses to cover it.
I've never played a motorized version of this, only the pedal version, yeah.
All right, the other thing, this is not my third thing. I'm on thing three, but just as a note, somewhere there's somebody so broke that they're just playing polo without horses, right?
Yeah, that's called field hockey.
Yeah, because calling it broke polo isn't going to get any new fans.
I like it. That's funny.
The third thing, and this is just a tangent. It's super interesting to me. Some people may have heard of this before, but in the course of research on this, I was looking up different similar games in the world. And there's one that's very popular in Central Asia that's super strange. It's called buzkashi. Have you heard of this?
No, I have not.
The word buzkashi, which I'm probably mispronouncing, literally means goat dragging in Persian. So it's these teams are horse mounted and they're attempting to drag a goat carcass or a calf toward a goal. It's the national sport of Afghanistan.
That is the national sport.
It's the Taliban bandit when they took power, but it was the national sport of Afghanistan. Taliban considered the game immoral, but it's, to me, it's similar in that, you know, there's one thing, in this case, a goat carcass instead of a ball, and they're competing teams trying to get this toward the goal. But they have matches on Fridays. Thousands of people come see them.
Wow. So awful that it was banned by the Taliban.
I mean,
that says something.
It was Taliban.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Oh man. Oh man. I hope I get in trouble for that one.
Clever.
But they also, in some places, people also play it using yaks, riding yaks, not dragging.
Riding
carcass.
A yak. Uh-huh. Dragging a goat carcass.
Yep. It's a different world, man. I don't know what to tell you.
It surely is.
I would love to see a game though.
I bet you could find a clip of that somewhere on YouTube. It has to be. There has to be one.
I'd love to read more about it. Yeah. So I think you can. I think if I recall correctly, I did watch one because it's not just in Afghanistan. It's, you know, in all the stands, Pakistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, all those.
Wow. Weird sport.
Weird sport. But, you know, if you look at it from the outside in, football is kind of weird too.
Yeah, that's true. I guess so. So there's other versions of this around as well. I mean, there's something called Moto Polo that's developed in Rwanda in 2008. And you think, when you first hear about this, you think, well, that's really the same thing we were just talking about. They play it on motorcycles.
Yeah.
The difference is that they use mallets and they hit a ball that's made out of banana leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot less brutal than dragging around a goat carcass, I guess. But still, it's a popular sport there. And only a couple of rules. One of the main rules would be that you don't use your feet to kick the ball.
Right.
And you can't stick objects into the other motorcycle's wheels, which makes perfect sense.
Well, it was started by a guy named Sam Dargan. Currently, it's not a global sport by any means. It has only a few dedicated followers. One thing that concerned me is that another one of their big rules is don't forget the beer.
That concerns you?
Well, I assume it's for after when they're hanging out.
That's a great rule.
Don't forget the beer. So there are five players on a team. They have opposing goals. They have 15-minute quarters with a beer's worth break in between.
Okay, I see where this is going. This is a beer league sport. This is like you know, the softball teams that they call the beer leagues.
Right.
It's
right.
A similar idea, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the capital of Rwanda, these kind of bikes we're talking about are commonly used as taxis, and people, and they're way more common there than they would be in your average U.S. town.
So these are kind of like the surplus bikes, the ones that are maybe a little washed up, a little used, not necessarily the ones that they need for making a living, but maybe their second bike.
I mean, they're like 125cc.
Okay.
So they're not, you know, they're not mean and large by any measure or means. So you can watch the first Moto Polo match from, Kigali, and that is on YouTube. It should still be up there. And it seems like people are getting interested, right? They also have one called the Indiana Jones rules. That's the one for the you can't stick stuff into the spokes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get it now.
And that's from, you know, the Last Crusade.
That's the I'm thinking of the minecart. Is that right?
Oh, wait, maybe the minecart's right.
Yeah, that's the minecart. They stuck
Cuz I'm thinking of tank treads.
Yeah, my minecart, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. So darn, I got to bone up on my Indiana Jones, man.
Maybe you're right. Tank treads. I don't know. I have to look into this. It's been a while.
Well, no, I think they definitely both happened. So maybe one of them was a callback. Anyway,
it's a good move.
It's a good move. It's an Indiana Jones move. We're digressing. We just want you to know that the dream of auto polo lives on today in some form or another. Possibly, if you have kids, with them on bikes, don't, I hate to be the guy who says it, but don't hop in your car and play this game. And
no, not in a parking lot at the mall or something. That's a terrible idea. But if you have maybe four-wheelers on some empty property out in the middle of nowhere, give it a shot. See what you come up with. I mean, I'd be interested to see if any of our listeners maybe have a video clip of them playing something like this.
Yeah.
That would be fun because, you know, it's the kind of thing where you drag out the old camcorder, you know, the end of the day, if it was, you know, a decade ago or whatever. If you're doing it now, of course, you got your iPhone, send in a clip. We'd love to see it.
I'd be interested, too, to see if a demolition derby would allow its participants to do something like this. It seems like the main thing is the risk to the person who's out there mallet manning, hanging off the side.
You don't want your arm hanging out of a demolition derby car, that's for sure.
No. I'd be driving.
Oh, I see.
We'll find someone else.
Okay, got it.
So we'll find someone else who is not as attached to
their
arms.
Don't worry. I'd be okay.
What's it? Yeah, right. How's that old joke go? Like, I've attached my arms. I've had them since I was young. Oh, all right. They're not all going to be funny, folks. Sorry about that.
Here, I got a funny one for you. This one for the kids. Yeah.
Okay.
Why does a chicken coop only have two doors?
Why is that?
Because if it had four doors, it would be a chicken sedan. That's a clean one. The kids could even say that, you know, that they can get away with that at school.
How have I not heard that one? That's a pretty clean one.
I don't know. It's an old one.
I found an old one that was okay. Tell me what you think of this.
All right.
There's no I in denial. Crickets.
What?
There's no I in denial. Like
no
the
I in denial.
Like the way denial is spelled.
Oh, boy, Ben.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Chicken coop, chicken sedan.
Yeah, that gets big laughs every time.
Yeah, you're killing it.
That gets big laughs.
You're killing it at the children's birthday crowd.
Yeah.
Well, we better go.
This really devolved, didn't it?
Let's take it back to chicken sedan.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's great.
I didn't mean to just stare at you after that.
Because that's the good one. That's the good one. All right. I've never heard that one, actually.
Yeah, it kills with the kids.
I bet it does.
No, not really. Kids would have to know what a coupe is and what a sedan is. And, you know, it just doesn't fly there. So it almost is like for driving age people.
Oh, man. It's for people who trade dad jokes, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, you know, that's a better way to classify that. That's a dad joke.
Oh, man.
Middle-aged man joke, maybe.
I like dad jokes. I think dad jokes are chuckle-worthy. Mm. So we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We hope that any disclaimer we did not explicitly say is easily understood, right? Because this is getting in a car, driving in close quarters, trying to hit people and balls.
Yeah, well, they need to bring this league back, a modern version of it.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, it's been 100 years. It's been 100 years since this is really popular. Let's get it back. Let's do it again.
I wonder if you could modify the vehicle such that it would be safer than it was in the beginning.
You remember that show that was on like Saturday mornings? It was called The Gladiators or something
like
that? Or American Gladiators?
Yeah, American Gladiators.
This would be a great sport for
and
them.
And
you
shoot those little Nerf things at you out of the turn.
They could do this on golf carts or something like that. Perfect use.
Oh, golf carts. That's not that bad.
Yeah,
I think golf carts would be...
I mean, geez, you could play this like an impromptu version of this on any golf course this weekend.
Not that we told you to do it.
No.
But if that happens, please send photos.
Please don't do it. But if you do.
But if you do, don't do it. But if you do, send photos. So we're going to go ahead and head out here. If you would like to see this and other interesting stories about cars from around the world and throughout time, check out our Facebook and Twitter pages where you can see us posting a lot of stuff that sometimes makes it to the air, sometimes doesn't for one reason or another. But the best way to know is to check us out there. We are Car Stuff HSW at both of those. You can hear every podcast we have ever done on our website, carstuffshow.com. And if you want to write to us directly, you have an idea for a nickname for our super producer, you have a topic you'd like us to cover in the future, you have a dad joke, or you want to start an auto polo league, you know, any old thing, write to us directly. We are
Carstuff at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.